Greetings and welcome to Fit for Duty. I'm Dr. Larry Earle, your host and president of the National Association of Occupational Health Professionals. Today we'll explore the world of occupational health, unraveling the complexities of OSHA-regulated exams, workers' compensation cases, drug testing, and injury care strategies. We'll also examine prevention strategies, total person health analytics and interventions, discussing innovative approaches to preventing workplace injuries and illnesses, using total person health analytics to identify underlying factors contributing to workplace health issues, and showcasing successful interventions that have improved employee health and well-being. Fit for Duty provides a holistic approach to occupational health, empowering organizations to create healthier, more productive workplaces. Join us as we push the boundaries, break down silos, and bridge theory and practice. One of the things that impresses me about Wamitha is that she started on the employer side as an RN in her HR and employee health almost 30 years ago. Met an OCMED doc at a Chamber of Commerce meeting in their small town. They started working together with those employees, and he eventually advised her to pursue her NP degree. A couple of decades later, she now works in that practice as a doctorate-level nurse practitioner and has excelled in addressing work comp patients from a holistic mindset. Wamitha Sullivan is a clinical nurse practitioner trained in family, psych, addiction, and occupational medicine, and in yoga and meditation. A diabetes educator trained in recognizing, addressing, and supporting broad community wellness initiatives as a way of life and not a shortcut. I'm very pleased to introduce you all to Wamitha Sullivan in this Fit for Duty episode we call Beyond Band-Aids, Why Holistic Care Matters for Workplace Injury Recovery. Okay, Wamitha Sullivan, give me a little background about how you got into occupational medicine and your work at SafeWorks. What attracted you to the field, and what do you feel like your biggest challenges are working at SafeWorks?
Oh my goodness, I love occupational medicine. I think this is the place where many of us should really start, because you see clients or patients at their most vulnerable when they have nothing else to lose and nowhere else to go. So about, 25 years ago, I did HR at an oil factory here in town. It's no longer around. And I did safety as well. And my biggest challenge then, being in HR, is trying to get my employees to safety when they were not well, so they could get treated. And in a small town like Champaign County, that was impossible. So we have a chamber of commerce that we were part of, and we would attend it regularly every month. And I ran into Dr. Fletcher.
Uh-huh.
And of course, you know, he sells himself well. So he saw a few of our employees, and they really felt loved and cared for, because they had a wraparound service, which we were missing at the time. So we were losing our patients to restrictions and home and sickness and all kinds of things that happen when an employee gets injured on the job. It's not just their injury on the job. It's what they're doing at home. Do they have small kids? Do they have a second job that now they're not able to do? Do they have medical needs that they really cannot afford because nobody's looking at what else needs to be done? So that was 21 years ago.
Wow.
And I have been with Dr. Fletcher on and off a long time.
Now, was that role a clinical role, or were you mentioned human resources. Was that a different field for you?
So it was human resources. So it was a totally different role. And the cool thing is, I had my RN degree, it's been about 28 years now. And so Dr. Fletcher was like, come and see what we do if you'd like to follow me. So I did. And the best story of my life is that he recommended I go to NP school, gave me a recommendation, and the rest is history.
Wow. Wow. And how long have you been there now?
So I've been here on and off since like 2001, 2002. But I have a new role of clinical director since the beginning of last year.
More recently.
Which is a really awesome role.
Right, so, right. And that's what led you to come to our last NAOHB conference where we met and got to chat about some of these things that we're going to be talking about today even. So today's topic, beyond Band-Aids, why holistic care matters for workplace injury and recovery. Let's jump into some of the questions that we've been discussing. First of all, how does a holistic approach to occupational health and workplace injury recovery differ from the traditional Band-Aid approach?
Well, I'm an NP, I'm an RN, and I think of when my kids were young and would injure themselves, they got a Band-Aid because it made it all better. It didn't fix much. If they had a scratch, that scratch still needed to heal and needed to be taken care of. So for having a holistic approach, I think the biggest thing I have learned is taking care of the full employee from head to toe, whether it's emotional-wise, social-wise, the multiple ways and multiple factors that we need or must address for an employee to get back to work is what's called holistic. I remind everybody, employees, employers, the people who support them, the case managers, you and myself, that our role in getting employees from injured to back to full time is really multiple. Some that are well researched, which includes having a really supportive work environment.
Yeah.
When we don't have that, and an employee doesn't feel loved and wanted, then they have no stake or need to come back. They just want to get sick and stay home.
Yeah.
This is really a topic that is timely because as we have seen since COVID, our mental health has just deteriorated. Injuries continue to happen. They're just more impacted now by mental health issues.
Yeah, you know, that workplace environment issue is really one of the red flags, right, that you can elicit from a patient about whether they do feel supported at work. And that can be a risk factor for delayed recovery if they don't have that support. What role does mental health play? You talked about that already in recovery from workplace injuries. How does it impact overall well-being in the workplace?
Well, The favorite areas that I talk about roles. So when an employee is not fully present and working at the top of their scope, then they're not meeting their role responsibilities. What I say is the impact that injuries, including the emotional impact, right? When an employee has an issue emotionally and is not able to come up or is not aware that their emotional fragility is causing them not to be fully present, they stress. How do people cope with injuries? I had said earlier that when you're stressed, you may be at a higher risk for getting injured, right?
Sure.
So how do we mitigate that stress? How do we help you understand that if you need a minute to yourself, you can take that minute now? Is this always possible? Probably not. But when we let our employees know that their performance is just as important as their injury, then we're good employers and good citizens.
Yeah, well said. Let's talk about, again, you touched on this already, the biopsychosocial model. You know, we talked about multiple facets of life that need to be addressed when you have a workplace injury. It's not just about the sore knee or the sprained ankle or the sore back. It's about other types of things that allow a patient to get better. As you said, it's support at work, it's transportation to get to their appointments and their therapy. It's support at home. Do they have the income from their workers' comp care? Is, you know, has all the paperwork been filed? You know, those types of things. So let's talk about biopsychosocial aspects.
So this is a really well-researched model, right? And it's the interplay between that biological, psychological, social factors. What I like to talk about is to think about how we understand health, illness, and recovery, because it's a cascade. When we acknowledge that somebody is ill, then what's our next step, right? So for you as an MD and myself as an NP, we understand that individuals' health and well-being are influenced by multiple things. Physically, can I climb that ladder so I can get to my forklift, right? Psychologically, how is my headspace? Did I get enough sleep? Did I eat enough? Is my blood sugar so low? Have I lost an hour of sleep, which I know I have, and I'm missing it? I hope it reverts and I get it back soon. And the environment, and really, truly, culturally, we are such a diverse population now that you will find all different cultures in one place. So how do we put this comprehensive framework for addressing those complex needs of the injured workers? They have all to be taken into account if we want the full employee to come back to his or her job.
Yeah, that's a great point. So how can employers prioritize mental health and holistic care for their employees to promote this overall well-being and productivity in the workplace?
There are many factors. My favorite ones, I talk about five of them. And the biggest one is having a creative, supportive work environment. So I think about when an employee comes in the morning and I am their clinical director and I'm not having a good day. Do I smile and shelve my bad day and go, hey, how are you? How are you doing today? Or do they say hello and I grunt, ugh, right? That is not supportive at all.
Right.
Do new moms and new dads, I have a few grandparents, show up after they've had a new baby and they want to show me a picture before the day begins. And I'm like, we already have five patients deep. Go away. Right? Or do I go, oh, let me see. It's a good picture, right? Are we offering mental health benefits to our employees? That's important. We know in some states that's hard, difficult to come by. And do we have any wellness programs, right? And what do they look like? Right? Are they inclusive? Are they for everybody? And how flexible do I help promote their home and their job as a balance, right? If they needed 5 minutes to take a phone call, would I allow that? Absolutely. So those are the five factors that I look at and I think that we try to practice here. Do we always manage that? Sometimes we fail, but then we get up the next day and we try it again.
It's an aspiration, right?
Right. Yeah.
What are some other common misconceptions about occupational health and workplace injury recovery, and how can they be addressed holistically?
I think my favorite one, and I've seen this because I've worked in a huge factory before, that an employee wants to get injured so they can make money. We know that's not true. Most employees come in fully prepared and ready to do the job they've done for 10, 20, 30 years, right? They're ready to go because they have made a living for their children, for their families here. How do we fix that? Is really by reminding everybody that not everybody is looking for free money or free services. And we need to believe our employees when they get injured or when they report their injuries. Another misconception is, mental health issues are super uncommon, you know, in the workplace. Now, we know that's not true.
Yeah, we know they're very common, aren't they?
Our employees, right, super common. Our employees have a different life. They may spend 10 hours with us 5 days a week, 4 days a week, but do they have high blood pressure? Do they have a child who is sick? Are they taking care of a spouse who is unwell, right? That would make you need a little mental health support. So we do have mental health issues in our employees, and we need to acknowledge that and be gentle with that. And I think the one that I really, really like is when I, as an employer, say, Dr. Earl, the reason you're injured is because you're careless and you just don't care for this job. We know that's not true. Most of us, as I said, we come in fully ready to do a good job. That ladder was left in a place where I just couldn't see it, right? So making it really simple and saying, that ladder was in the wrong place. You fell on it. Let's do a better job of sweeping the place up before we leave at night. And at least leaving a light on for the day people who come in at 6 a.m. not to fall on that ladder.
There you go. And that's, you know, that leads into one of our next questions. What are some strategies for creating a supportive and inclusive work environment that values and prioritizes employees' mental health and overall well-being? So you just mentioned a strategy. What others can you tell us about?
I had talked about promoting mental health awareness. In many companies, we have EAP programs, yeah. That's employee assistance programs, right? But most employers don't have anything to do with that. I think we need more than just an EAP. We need a cheerleader in the office who is able to recognize that this employee looks a little different today. What is it? Did they lose that 1 hour of sleep? Is it they have a flu today, right? And then we destigmatize mental health, right? It is not a bad thing to say, today I'm having a rough day. I'm a little depressed. I'm a little anxious. I woke up anxious, right? We all do have moments when things just don't go right for us. And how are we providing that support to that employee who says, man, today I'm just having a bad morning, right? We need to have somebody good enough available who can sit down even for 3 minutes to say, what can I do for you right now, right? And really encourage employees to have that balance in their lives. If you're scheduled 7 days in a row with us today, do we maybe need to cut that down to just 6.5 days, right? My employees want to be here every day. I'm like, yeah, I'll stay, right? But we need to encourage our employees to also give us feedback, right? How many times as a medic, as a director here, do I go, oh, how are you doing today? I'm always afraid to ask that because what if there's something I cannot handle? So am I optimally at my top scope today? Maybe not. So maybe I need somebody else who can step in my shoes, like Dr. Fletcher or Tanya or Dr. Brown, when I'm overwhelmed myself. Yeah, acknowledging and celebrating what our employees achieve, right? So yesterday you came in, you were tired, you looked rugged, you'd lost an hour of sleep. We helped you get back home. We're so excited to see you today, right? It's an achievement to get employees out of bed. And we want them to know that we are glad they're here, hanging out with us and working with us.
So that concept you mentioned of the cheerleader, right? Someone who can identify perhaps those that are not at the top of their game today. Is that an occupational health nurse? Is it someone in human resources? Is it a coworker that's been perhaps specially trained to help other coworkers? There's no one size fits all, I'm sure. So how does a company sort of nurture that type of a person to be available? And then what are the outside resources that might be available to support that role as well?
Yeah, so we all know some of us have zero nurturing skills, right? And so as a cheerleader, we want to choose all kinds of cheerleaders. We need a diversified team of cheerleaders. It would be nice for the nurturing people on our teams to be the ones who are like, yeah, be on the lookout, right? They need to look out and go, ooh, I think Wilma is having a rough day today. Let me help her. We also need to have companies really endorse, encourage, and pay for mental health first aid, right? That's a new, relatively new thing. We thought first aid was just for when you scratched your finger or had a paper cut. But we have a whole new facet of first aid, and it's mental health. I know here in town, we have people who do that training, and it's really an awesome thing for employers to go ahead and send a few people who are willing, because it's a tough job.
Yeah.
Some of us do not want to carry your burdens. Outside, we talked about EAP, but EAP is not really hands-on right now.
Right.
We need an immediate now, the naturists who are hanging out with us. We need that those mental health assistants who are trained in that, their extension. And then we need to have people who we can say, hey, Dr. Earl, Wilmaith is struggling today. We know you're the champion of mental health. Would you have a few minutes today to just call her and see how she's doing? And then we need to train our managers to reach out often instead of thinking, oh, I got to call her again. Reach out. We want to keep you as an employee because you know and I know replacing an employee is such a tough thing.
Yeah.
We don't want to lose anyone if we don't have to lose them.
Yeah, retention is really key. You know, you mentioned some ways to engage with outside resources. And certainly in mental health, I think telehealth resources are probably one of the better things that have come along in terms of getting access. It's so difficult to get access on a bricks and mortar basis, right, for mental health services. How have you been able to engage any telehealth services, or do you know that how that's happening for companies that can't have a mental health person on staff or in the clinic or in the workplace?
Yes, actually, our company has, it's called PMHP, and these are the people who send you a weekly, maybe even bi-weekly topic of what's new in the news today. And they have a whole section of psych NPs and psych MDs who you can call, and they're available at the end of the line when you need them without any wait.
Yeah.
Now, I am in a college town, so we have a ton of telehealth services. We ourselves participate in it. So if there's a crisis and an employee needs us, we want that employee to call and say, I am in a crisis. I need to talk to someone, right? We may have 5 patients waiting, but then we have to have that energy to say to our patients, if you give me 5 minutes, please and thank you, I need to take this phone call. Most employers and employees can be talked to for exactly 2 minutes to say, I am here, I'm available, you can come if you really need to come. And or by extension, do we need to call 911 if it's that critical?
Yeah.
Or do we need to send you in, right? But it's important that we continue to advocate for telehealth services. Those have been a lifesaver.
Yeah, indeed. You know, let's talk about, talking about identifying folks that have risks for mental health and biopsychosocial aspects of care. How do we look for those red flags and identify any risk factors that should make us more proactive in addressing these issues with patients, with workers, especially for injured workers? Because these things, these things lead to delayed recovery. How do we identify those risks?
So red flags sometimes are so red, you can see them before they even happen, right? And then there are red flags that everybody goes, wow, I did not see that coming, right? Comprehensive assessments. And these need to be continuous. You don't do an assessment on Monday and go, yeah, we're good for the rest of the year, right? When you get that careful planning, assess your needs. And this needs to be done. If you need to do it every day, by all means, do it every day. We do know that things may change at a blink of an eye, right? You may be sitting there having a great time seeing your patients, get a headache, don't feel good, fall out, have a really bad outcome, right? How are we committed to helping our employees on the job if something like that happens? Do we have an interdisciplinary approach, right? In my clinic, if that happens, you just push a button and somebody comes to help. And or you open the door and you say, I need help, and somebody comes to help. Are we looking at early intervention? I think sometimes we don't pay attention to those things we need to pay attention to. So you come in limping in on Monday. Well, for me, it's because I wore my new high heels on Sunday. That's my excuse, right? But maybe it's not. Maybe I fell. Now I'm limping. Who does that assessment of, hey, Maitha, you're limping today. How's it going? Are you okay, right? And how do we help you not climb on that ladder? Because you're limping, you may not be climbing on that ladder. Well, but we need you to do your job. So do we have leeway and support? What other people can come to my rescue, right? And by all means, if we fail in all this and you get injured, what are our policies of returning you back with restrictions, with just one eye and a patch? So my clinic, you can come back with three eye patches, right? Because we can sit you at a desk and help the transcriptionist people do their job.
Yeah, certainly modified duty programs are.
Then what? Right.
Yeah, modified duty has to be part of that supportive environment that a company allows for patients, right? If they're just off duty, it's very difficult to get recovery if you're not in the workforce. So I agree, those modified duty programs are just really crucial make sure they have them.
Yeah. And I think also it's training our supervisors, right? Because if they need somebody to be on that forklift, they need somebody on that forklift. I can't get on it. I don't want to get on it. I have a broken toe for my high heels. How do you expect me to do that? Yeah. Right? So it's supervisors need training and then always evaluate what you're doing. At the end of the day, if you have done all that and you don't survey and look back at what you've done, then you don't have the data that it was successful or not. And then you have time to pivot, update, change, delete, add new people, change the way you're doing, change a policy if it needs to be changed. And I always tell my employers that not all employees are going to sue, but we always want to think of that, especially if we see red flags. We want to be prepared for anything and everything.
Well said. Hey, we have a couple minutes here to finish up. Let's talk about, you know, there's this disconnect between the time that a workers' compensation case runs out and when someone is truly ready to return to work. I wanted to address that. How can we improve this for better outcomes?
So every now and then, we just come to a place where there's no other place to go. I think creating a supporting environment, right? Do we provide education and training, or have we? So planning should begin the minute that employee is injured. So here's the plan that comes from HR. When you get injured, we file a claim, we send it to these guys. This is the name of your adjuster. We'll send it to SafeWorks. They will see you for whatever you need. They will do whatever they need to do to get you back to us, right? Here are, we will take restrictions. In the meantime, we only give this much time. Or your adjuster has decided today that you're done, right? Do we have short-term disability? Do we have long-term disability? What else do we have to draw on? Can you come back on a restricted duty until we resolve this, right? Or do we just need to say, go away, you're out of money, we can't help you?
Yeah.
Do we want to help you apply for disability, right? We're getting older and older employees now, right? They're 72, they've been injured. This hip is not going to be fixed for another 10 days. Can they really afford not to be paid? What's our stopgap? Do we have one? How do we balance that? Short-term disability, is it available? Yes or no? This is part of policymaking, because we all know that at some point, somebody is going to be injured. Do we address that with a supportive smile and say, hey, this is what we do in this case? But we need to plan from the beginning and hopefully to when we return you fully to the job and have no gaps in care. Are we sensitive with that? Are we culturally sensitive?
Yeah.
What are our biases, right?
Yeah. Yeah, well put. You know, well beyond the strict medical model of looking at a sore knee and just treating it, collaboration, communication between the healthcare providers you touched on, employers, the caseworkers, the adjusters. It really, this is what it takes, a village, right? It takes a team of folks to address all these different issues to avoid delayed recovery and get people back to healthier, happier, more productive lives and more productive workforce. Wamitha Sullivan, I want to thank you so much for joining this discussion today on why holistic care matters for workplace injury recovery. It's been delightful to have you today. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah.
I appreciate you.
And, you know, more conversations to come in the future, I'm sure. Thank you all for joining us today. That'll wrap it up for today's episode of Fit for Duty. Thanks for joining us.
And that wraps up another episode of Fit for Duty. Thanks for joining me today, everyone. I hope you found this conversation as engaging and informative as I did. As always, building healthier, happier workplaces starts with knowledge and collaboration. So if you enjoyed this episode, please consider subscribing to Fit for Duty wherever you listen to podcasts. That way you'll never miss a beat when it comes to the latest trends, best practices, and inspiring stories in occupational health. Until next time, stay safe, stay well, and keep elevating workplace excellence.